is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads, wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. We've had their partnership manager and training specialist, Jefferson Mason, and marketing manager, Nick Bartlett, on the show in the past, and we couldn't be more excited about what they're doing for the game of basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Beyond efficient reps, Dr. Dish provides training expertise and versatility designed to develop complete players. The new Dr. Dish CT machine has further revolutionized basketball training with over 150 plus on-demand individual and team workouts from some of the best coaches and trainers in the game. These workouts include video instruction and combine game-like shooting drills with ball handling, conditioning, and agility drills. Along with workouts, the Dr. Dish training management system also provides stat tracking and analytics to track progress and ensure accountability. These are just a few reasons why top programs like Duke, North Carolina, Louisville, Florida, Baylor, and countless others are upgrading to Dr. Dish. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com. Follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. And make sure you mention the Hoopheads podcast to get $300 off your next Dr. Dish purchase. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get out and get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klintzing here with my co-host, Jason Sunkel. And tonight we are going to talk some NBA, Jay. And let's start out with the debut of Carmelo Anthony tonight for the Portland Trail Blazers.
Yeah, so before we get into the stat line, I do have to say something, Mike. A coworker of mine asked me like 3 weeks ago, Mr. Judson said, "Hey, do you think Melo's going to have any chance in the NBA again?" And I said, "No." So I have to eat crow and say, I apologize to Jesse Judson, Mr. Judson, that I was wrong. I just didn't think that there was a situation that was presenting itself, and the fact that he'd been out of the league for a year and no one had even like really sniffed him. I'm just, you know what? I'm happy for him though, because I mean, the fact that he literally stepped on an NBA floor tonight and scored 10 points and, you know, looked like
he was contributing. Good. It's pretty good for a guy who hasn't played for a year.
I mean, literally, that would be like, I'm not trying to, like, one of us just showing up and playing. Because, I mean, I know he's had trainers and he's definitely a Hall of Famer and he's a great player, but considering he hasn't played in, a year essentially, like, that's pretty impressive, in my opinion.
Yeah, I don't know that he's going to make any difference for the Portland Trail Blazers, who are now currently 5-10 and just only ahead of the lowly G League Golden State Warriors. But I do think that it's good to have him back in the league. Whatever, say what you will about Carmelo, I think his career has gotten tarred and feathered here at the end in a way that I'm not sure is entirely fair based on the type of player that he was when he was in his prime. And I've said it before, but you go back to when Carmelo was at his very, very best, and I'm not sure that there was anybody that I would have picked ahead of him if I needed a basket, and it didn't necessarily have to be a three, but I just needed a bucket. I'm not sure I wouldn't have picked Carmelo to put the ball in his hands and let him score. He was a great scorer, never a good defender, was a good rebounder, obviously had the reputation as being a ball stopper, but I think his career has gotten tainted by the fact that the game has just shifted so much towards the three and towards space and drive and kick, and that just wasn't his game. Carmelo, I think, would have been, if you put his career back and started him in 1985, I think he would have, obviously he had a great career anyway, as you said, he's a Hall of Famer, but I think if you put him in 1985 NBA, I think he's looked upon totally different, because the things that he does or did fit that style of play much more than they fit the style of play that we have today. And really, today's style of play with the number of threes that are being taken really has only come into prominence since, you know, maybe that first Warriors championship season of 2014-2015. It was maybe trending that way a little bit in the early 2010s, But the Warriors really pushed it over the top. And then as people like the Rockets and other teams started to figure out the math and people just started chucking them all over the place, it just changed the way people perceived Carmelo's career. And then I think there's always a stigma that, you know, we're starting to see that with James Harden, and we'll talk about him in a second, but there's always that stigma when you don't win a title, how great can you be considered when you haven't won a championship? And for Carmelo, he never even made it to the NBA Finals. So I think that's something that, you know, he's going to have to reckon with.
He only got to the Western Conference Finals once, right?
Correct.
So, I mean,
Barkley got to the finals, and he was that year that Barkley went up against Jordan in the finals.
Barkley almost outplayed him, didn't he?
I mean, it was close. I mean, Michael outplayed him, but Barkley was phenomenal in that series. I don't have his stats in front of me, but he was unbelievable in that series, and that was probably apex Charles Barkley. But it's still, regardless of what you say, and as good as he was, it still is held against him. If he had won a title and you were bumping him, you'd probably bump him up on the list of, you know, all-time greatest players. Same way with Karl Malone. You know, you look at Karl Malone's regular season stats and you're like, this guy's probably a top five all-time NBA player. And yet, if you watched him in big moments when it was time to come through, he just wasn't at the level of the guy he was going against, which in that case for him most of the time was Jordan. And so Harden's going to have to deal with that too. You know, I listened to the Bill Simmons Book of Basketball podcast about Harden today, and him and Zach Lowe were talking about you want me to spoil it for you?
Well, I got halfway through, so you can spoil it.
I'll just give you one point that they talked about, which, you know, we've talked about it here, is what's his signature playoff moment?
When he got benched.
Right. I mean, there isn't one. Any signature playoff moment that he has that you remember is negative. And I think that that's where his legacy is going to become interesting. I think it's what hurts Carmelo, is when you don't win and you don't come through in big moments, ultimately it impacts how people view your career. No matter what the statistics are, there's still, because basketball is a game with five players and one player can have such an outsized impact on wins and losses, you got to hold those guys, I think, accountable, and maybe to a fault, but still, that's the reality of how NBA fans and NBA historians perceive the greatest players, is the guys who have won titles rank above those who haven't. And that's just the reality. And I think Carmelo's going to have to reckon with that, because I don't think we have to worry about Portland winning any championships this year.
Yeah, I will say the most Carmelo sequence ever happened was the first possession, the first time he took a shot, Mike, and I know you didn't watch it. I watched the first quarter and a half until he got his third foul halfway through the second quarter, and then I kind of turned it off because he wasn't going to play the rest of the half, and I just didn't put it on in the second half. But Carmelo's first shot was a dribble inside the three-point line, and he was long on it. But then he made a three-pointer, which he was 2 of 3 from three tonight, so that's a good stat line. That's probably the best part of the stats that he has, is he was 2 of 3 from behind the arc. But one thing I will say is he was doing a lot of, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, because I could very well be wrong, but I don't really remember a lot of times when he would set screens and then he would roll to the basket. I feel like he would do a lot of the flaring out and popping out behind the arc. I don't really recall a lot of, like, screens and rolls. There was multiple times tonight that he was setting screens and then a hard dive to the basket, and he scored a layup on one, and then another one he thought he was going to try to dunk over Jackson Hayes and realized his athleticism wasn't going to get him there at this point. But, you know, I don't recall him really screening and diving to the basket much in years past. Do you?
No, I wouldn't say that was part of his bread and butter. I think he was more of a guy who wanted to, if he did screen, he wanted to pop back out and get the ball and be able to then go one-on-one and do the things that he was really good at, which was score in a one-on-one situation and in isolation. And who knows? I know there was an article I saw that I just read maybe the first paragraph or two, talking about how, again, he said that he wants to buy into a role. He understands where he fits in. And, you know, it remains to be seen whether or not that's the case. I think the problem right now with Portland is that with all the injuries that they have in the front court, like they don't really need him to play a role. They need him to be an important cog in what they're trying to do.
And I think that was very evident tonight. I mean, he took the second most shots in the game. That he literally rolled off the street and showed up and had 14 shots. And the only person that took more shots on the team tonight was McCollum. And I know Dames was hurt, and they didn't want to play him after he's having some back issues, I guess. But I just don't understand how Portland
could... Let's put it this way. That's bad for Portland, and it's bad for Carmelo. Oh,
I told you. What did I tell you, Mike? I said the most damning thing for the Portland Trailblazers today was the fact that the Pelicans thought it was necessary to double Carmelo. Like, this guy literally, like I said multiple times, rolled in off the street, and Portland, I mean, Rodney Hood was terrible. And everyone else in the team was terrible, except McCollum played an okay game. But
you got theoretical Rodney Hood.
Yeah. So McCollum had 22 points. Whiteside had 14 points. Actually, Whiteside didn't have a bad game. 14 points, 5 of 7 from the field, 14 rebounds. But when you're relying on Carmelo Anthony to take 14 shots in a game when he hasn't played an NBA basketball game in a year, that's not a good sign.
All right, let's zoom out, bigger picture for Portland. So they're 5-10. They're in, 14th in the West. At what point do they, A, pull the plug, B, decide that, hey, we got to push the panic button, we've got to trade for Gallinari, or we got to trade for Kevin Love? Where do you think they stand? Do you think that they pull the trigger on one of those trades thinking they can still get back into it, or
I think they pull the plug, Mike. I think McCollum can't be gone until December. Like, I don't know when the date that he can't be traded to, but I feel like if anyone's going to go, it's going to be him, right? I mean, I don't think they're going to trade Dame.
They're not going to trade Dame. I mean, what they would have to do is you'd have to package some combination of probably Whiteside. Any team that's trading with Portland is going to want Anthony Simons. I think, to me, it comes down to how much does Portland value the future of Anthony Simons versus them trying to climb back into this thing and thinking that they can get back to the Western Conference Finals or win a title. I think at this point it has to be dawning on them at 5-10 and Dame was spectacular until he got hurt. I think it has to be dawning on them that maybe, just maybe, this isn't their year. And they came into it thinking that it was. So I'll be curious, because they can't let it go much further in the West. I mean, if you continue to play at this level and, like, just let's double out this record, now they're 10-20 or they're 15-30, like, you're done. I mean, even at 10-20, I think you're pretty close in the West to being finished.
Yeah,
and so, you know, you're talking about that accelerates their timeline of when they have to make a decision. I don't know. I could see him punting on the season, saying, hey, we're just going to keep Simons, and then you see what happens next year when you can get some contracts off the
book.
And
here's the indicator, Mike.
Team.
You ready for the indicator?
I'm ready.
On Saturday night when they play the Cavs, if we beat them, you pull the plug.
All right. That's fair.
I mean, the Cavs are kind of in a bit of a free fall. Who knows what with the Kevin Love situation, but that's what I'm going to say. I'm going to say if they lose to the Cavaliers, I would start to really consider pulling the plug, because we know they're losing Thursday. They're playing Milwaukee. They're losing Thursday, playing Milwaukee. Then they're playing the Cavs. I just think that they have to really consider it, like seriously consider it.
And they might. I mean, they might pull the plug and just say, hey, we're not trading. We're just going to suffer through a difficult year and try to bounce back next season. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what they do. Yeah. I think another team that's in that same position is the Spurs. I know we're talking about the bottom of the Western Conference here, but real quick, just wanted to touch on the Spurs. They 5-9, right above Portland in the West. What do they do as far as, are they going to end up keeping DeRozan, or is DeRozan going to be a guy that's going to get shipped out because his contract is over at the end of the year? I would be stunned if they were willing to pay him what somebody out there in the market is going to pay him. And if you pull the plug on DeRozan, you trade him, I'm not sure what you're getting back in terms of assets that are going to help you to win this season. And the West, you know, there's some teams that I think are better than people thought. you know, we've talked about Sacramento, and I had them in the playoffs, and they started out really bad, and now they've, you know, they've won five out of their last six. So Sacramento appears to be turning it around. You got Phoenix and Minnesota, who are both, I think, playing better than, you know, what people thought. I know you had the Mavericks in the playoffs, and they're right now they're the five seed tied with Utah. So there's just a lot of good teams in the West, and I think for Portland and San Antonio, two teams that went into the season, at least internally, I'm sure, with pretty high expectations, those two teams, I don't know, it'll be interesting to see if they pull the plug or if they try to keep plugging away at it and see if they can get back into the playoff.
Yeah,
I'm not sure what's going to happen there.
I believe in Greg Popovich, but at the same time, I just don't know what he can do with his roster. And I think they have to really start considering, ooh, this isn't going to go well this year.
The other thing that was interesting with the Spurs was that when Pop got thrown out the other night, and there was the, I don't know if it's a controversy, but just trying to figure out who the acting head coach was.
And so Tim Duncan.
Duncan was running this huddle, but it should have been Becky Hammon because she was the next in line, but she was kind of running the coach's huddle, and then Duncan took the, you know, the actual timeout to talk to the players. It was kind of interesting that became a controversy. And I guess Pop, I forget what his exact quote was. He said something like, because somebody asked him about whether or not we should have just let Becky Hammon do it so she could be the first woman to ever coach a North American men's professional team. And he said something like, you know, we're not here to make history. And, you know, sort of the old curmudgeonly Pop answer. But it was just interesting to me that became a controversy when he got tossed out.
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of think that it was just...
It's neither here nor there.
Exactly.
Neither here nor there. Not, I mean, probably was made a bigger deal of by NBA Twitter. But exactly.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk about some good teams now, Mike.
All right.
So I just keep continually to be amazed that the Celtics are playing at the level they're playing. I'm impressed by them. I'm impressed by the Heat. I'm impressed by Milwaukee. I am not impressed by the Philadelphia 76ers. They just look, I don't know. The Cavs obviously almost beat them, then they got beat pretty bad. But I just don't know what's going on in Philly. They just don't. They don't seem to have any confidence right now.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, they're going to be a team, I think, that we talked about it before, that's going to be built on the defensive end of the floor. I mean, that's really where they're going to do the majority of their damage, because offensively, Embiid is a great talent and obviously can score. Simmons is a struggle with spacing. Horford's getting a little bit older. I'm not sure offensively that he's somebody that you can count on night in and night out to give you a significant contribution on the offensive end. He's still going to do Al Horford things, but you know, if you're expecting Al Horford to get you 17 points a night at this point, I don't think that's going to happen. Josh Richardson hasn't shot the ball nearly as well as I think Philly fans and the Philly organization thought he would. And so as a result, they're kind of struggling on offense. And you know, it's a weird team. It's a team that you still wonder long term, how do Simmons and Embiid fit together? They're two super talented guys. They're two guys that just individually I like as players, but you wonder, can it work? And that's not to say that it does, it's not going to work. I mean, they're 8-5 and they're sitting below where certainly we thought they were. We thought that Milwaukee and Philly were going to separate themselves and be the class of the Eastern Conference with, you know, a little group behind them. But
yeah,
I think the reality
at all, Mike, I'm not feeling good about that.
No, I mean, I wouldn't feel too good about that either, but I think it's early. Because they've got such an odd team, I think they still have time to start putting it together. And then the other thing that goes along with this too is I think that the group of Toronto, Miami, and Boston, who we thought were the next tier behind Milwaukee and Philadelphia, all three of those teams have been much, much better than not only we expected, but I think national media, everybody expected. And so that's kind of put these other teams under that. It's put Philly for sure under the spotlight of, look, Miami's 9-3, Toronto's 9-4, Boston's 11-2. You know, come on, Philly, what are you doing? And so I think that there's maybe a little bit of that that's kind of creeping in. Philly hasn't looked good. They've looked kind of discombobulated and disjointed in the times that I've seen them. But they have a weird team. The question is Brett Brown the guy to help them figure it out? I know there's a lot of talk out there that you know, maybe he's not the best coach for this particular group.
Hey, he's going to coach Australia, though.
Yeah.
He's good.
Well, so we'll see. I mean, I'm not that worried about Philly. I mean, I'm glad I didn't pick him to win the title. But
thanks, Mike.
No offense. But I do still think that it's early, and I think that these other teams, I can't believe that Toronto's going to continue to play as well as they have. I mean, Siakam's fine. Ananobi's fine. I'm just not sure that the Siakam, Ananobi, and Fred VanVleet, those guys collectively, they're not scary enough to me if I'm an opponent. I think there are things I can do to stop them. Miami, I don't know. I mean, Miami has, you know, Spoelstra's a good coach. They have a good culture. I won't be surprised if they stay up there near the top. Milwaukee's going to continue to roll. Boston, seems like they've got some things figured out, but you never know.
I'm feeling really good about my Miami in the Eastern Conference Finals, by the way. That's going to be my best prediction that I made.
I think it's fair. I still think Milwaukee, when you look at their roster, you know, beyond Giannis, the rest of their roster is, you know, they certainly don't have a second and third best player that are as good as some of these other teams. But Giannis continues to be so good. And, you know, last time we talked, last week, we said Giannis was the clear-cut favorite. There really wasn't anybody else. And, you know, we could, I guess, throw the discussion towards our friend James Harden at this point, who I'm looking at his numbers right here in front of me as far as an MVP. He's averaging 39 a game. He's making 5 threes a game, although he's taking 14.3.
How many – threes. Well, how many was it? How many did he take last season? Like 1,089?
Something like that. He's averaging 15 free throws a game.
That's insane.
He's getting to the line 14 and a half times per game, shooting 88%. He's only shooting 42% from the field, and he's only shooting 34% from three, and he's averaging 39 a game. It's insane. And regular season James Harden is an incredible scorer. There are things that he can do that nobody else in the league is able to do. And yet I don't really want to watch him play, which is
painful.
That's a guy that scores 39 a game that you don't enjoy watching him play. And then just like our earlier discussion, until I see him do it on a big stage and carry his team to a big win or big wins and at least get them to the finals. I mean, to me, this is all empty calorie stats. And I know he's not doing it. It's not a good stats, bad team situation, because Houston, arguably, I think they're 11-3. You know, they're arguably right there in the top five teams in the league. And they've consistently been there over this stretch where Harden's been incredible in the regular season. But just like, you know, we watched the Cavs for four seasons where the regular season didn't really mean much. It was just kind of a long, slow slog to get to the games that matter. And I think with Harden, yeah, he's going to continue to pile up regular season numbers, and he's incredibly durable. But show me in the playoffs, James. That's consistently been my remarks when it comes to Harden. And Until May and June rolls around, I just don't – all this, whatever, great. He's going to average 39 a game. If he does, it'll be incredible from a regular season standpoint. That'll be the highest scoring average other than Wilt. But, you know, more power to you, James.
I think my second place MVP right now is Doncic, Mike. I'm going there already. I'm ready to say it. I think he's second. I think Giannis is still number one, but I think Doncic is number two right now.
All right, that's fair. I'd put Luka three, probably. I mean, again, as much as I dislike Harden, if the Rockets continue to play at an 11-3 pace over the course of the season, and Harden averages almost 40 points a game, he might win the MVP if they continue to win at the same clip they have. But let's say this, I would put Luka right now third behind Giannis and behind James Harden. He's got Dallas at 8-5. He's averaging almost a triple-double. When you watch him play at his age, the command that he has over the game and the way he's able to manipulate defenses and get where he wants to go. And he's so strong and he's so crafty. And because of that, wow, he's just fun. He's fun to watch. A guy who knows how to pass and sees things that other guys don't see is just really fun. It's weird because Harden fits that description to some degree. Like, Harden's very, very crafty. Harden sees passes that other normal guys don't see. But there's just something about his game that I dislike and I don't want to watch. Whereas Luka, you turn on one of his games and he's mesmerizing to watch just because of, I don't know, there's something about him that I like versus there's something about James Harden that I don't like. And maybe it's the ball stopping. Maybe it's...
Maybe just, you're just jealous of the beard, man.
Man, it's... I think it was in the Simmons Lowe podcast that they talked about how more visiting teams should troll James Harden and put up like high school yearbook photos of him without the beard on the scoreboard, which I thought was pretty. I thought they should make one of those fat heads with him. Yeah, I thought that was pretty funny. I kind of enjoyed that. That'd be kind of a funny one. But all three of those guys, Giannis, Harden, and Luka, have been fantastic, and I think you'd probably have to put those would have to be the top three at this point. Although, if you're a Lakers fan and you know you're sitting there, Lakers are 11-2. You know, Davis and LeBron are probably
LeBron,
right there.
LeBron
in that
averaging
as well.
25, 7.5 rebounds and 11 assists per game.
I will say it's nice to see him taking a back seat to Anthony Davis.
Hey, listen.
Yeah, I don't think that. I guess his scoring average is down 2 points a game, so he's looking to defer.
Anthony Davis and him are comparable in scoring statistics, but he's definitely the engine that drives the show.
Oh, there's no question. Without LeBron, like I don't see how. Let's say that these other three guys that we just mentioned fall off, or let's say the Lakers end up winning between 55 and 60 games. Can you foresee a scenario where LeBron averages 25, 9, and 11, or 25, 8, and 11, and Anthony Davis averages 26 points and 13 rebounds, and they're like, oh, yeah, Anthony Davis, MVP?
There's zero chance.
No, there's zero chance. I mean, maybe LeBron gets it in that case, which I kind of doubt that will happen. I think it's more likely that maybe there's a split vote amongst Laker media members or – you know, the Laker faithful, but there's no way Davis wins an MVP as long as LeBron's playing at the level that he's currently playing at. And there's no way the Lakers win at this level if LeBron doesn't continue to play the way he's played. So I don't see an MVP in Anthony Davis's future anytime soon.
All right, fun fact for you, Mike, they're playing right now and LeBron's the only one on the floor that hasn't scored in the first 4 minutes for the Lakers. Everyone else has scored.
Hey, LeBron's trying to get his teammates involved.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he is. 2 assists already. He's going to get that 10 assists tonight. Saying that
All
much.
Right. Before we wrap things up, let's spend a couple minutes talking Cavs. I know that after that, or it was either after or during the Knicks game. I can't remember when the text came in or when we talked, and you're like, yeah, the Cavs seem like they've fallen off a cliff, and they definitely have looked different in the last game and a half,
well,
two games.
Kevin Love got hurt, and he didn't play yesterday. So that's definitely a glaring weakness. And here's the scary thing, Mike. They obviously Kevin Love wasn't playing, so they had to have game planned for Tristan Thompson because Tristan Thompson looked terrible yesterday, at least in the first half. I turned it off at halftime. I watched the football game instead. Or watch the whatever football game was on instead when that happened, because I was like, eh, I'm kind of over it. But they definitely did not look right yesterday at all. Which and I want to be clear here. I think that the ball movement was good. I thought they were moving the ball. I thought they were trying to execute. They just didn't execute, and they didn't look very good shooting the basketball. They didn't look good. They didn't take care of the basketball as well as they should have yesterday against a terrible Knicks team. But the ball movement was there and the energy was there. They just didn't look very good.
Yeah, it worries me when I'm looking at their team statistics right now. So their leading scorer is who?
Like, It has to be
average.
It has to be Kevin Love or Tristan Thompson.
Kevin Love, 18 a game.
And Tristan's rebounder. Two?
Leading rebound. I don't know who's two.
Leading rebound has got to be Tristan, right?
No, second leading scorer is Sexton at 17.9. Love's at 18.2.
Okay.
So rebounds is
it Love again?
Kevin Love at 12, Tristan at 10. All right, now here's where it gets interesting. Who is leading the Cleveland Cavaliers in assists?
Well, last time Love was leading the Cavs in assists. Last time I heard,
he is no longer leading the Cavs in assists.
Okay, I'm gonna go with. Oh God, probably not one of the Rooks, or I'm gonna say Chetty.
It is not Chetty, although Chetty is. Let's see, Chetty is dishing out a robust 1.6 assists per game.
So he's nowhere near. I have no clue.
No, sorry. I discredited him. 2.0 assists per game. 1.6 is his assist to turnover ratio. So here are the Cavs' assist totals, not associating a name with a total. 2.9, 2.2, 2.4, 2.2, 1.1, 3.3, 2.0, 1.4, 2.2. That is frightening.
Who's leading the team in assists?
Darius.
It is Garland. Oh, dear Lord.
Darius Garland, 3.3 assists per game. Now, when I first saw that, I was like, man, what is their assist to turnover ratio? It has to be like atrocious. But as a team, they're averaging 19 assists per game, and they're only turning the ball over 14 times a game. So I guess you could say that.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good in this NBA, right? Yeah, 14 turnovers isn't terrible.
No, but that they're taking care of the ball, but they're also just not. It worries me when you have two guards that are playing legitimate minutes. I mean, Garland's playing 27 minutes a game. Sexton's playing 30 minutes a game. And together they're combining for 5.5 assists.
Yeah.
That scares me a little.
Yeah, I agree. And we'll see what happens. But I'm not as optimistic as I was last week, Mike.
All right. Well, I'm glad you come down to earth. I don't think the playoffs are in the Cavs' future. We need to get Kevin Love back healthy, either to help this team look semi-functional and fun like they were when he was playing, or let's get some trades going and get Love and Tristan onto the Trailblazers or onto somebody else, and let's get some more draft picks and young players in here and. Hopefully, maybe we can pass the ball at some point. We'll have to see. So, all right, that's what's going on around the league. I don't think there's anything else really big that we need to hit on.
I might not be able to play next week because I might have to be on load management, Mike.
All right. Well, hey, that happens. I understand. It's Thanksgiving week next week, so who knows? Maybe I'll do a solo NBA pod.
A monologue.
Exciting happens. Yeah, we'll just – exactly. I'll pull the Jay Leno or the Johnny Carson or the David Letterman monologue NBA pod. So, anyway, thanks for listening, everybody out there, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
As you've listened to the Hoopheads podcast, one common topic that continually comes up in our conversations is character. I'm fortunate to be associated with the Positive Coaching Alliance, a national nonprofit movement that provides valuable tools, training, and resources for coaches, athletes, parents, and administrators that is centered around sports and educational psychology and organizational behavior research. PCA combines this research with practical advice from a national advisory board of top pro and college athletes and coaches who utilize PCA principles at the highest levels of competition. Through a partnership with our local Cleveland chapter of the PCA, we are pleased to offer a discount code to allow you, our listeners, to take a PCA online course for just $20. To take advantage of this offer, visit the store on positivecoach.org and enter the discount code HOOPHEADS20. That's HOOPHEADS20 with two capital H's. Coaches, I hope you'll take advantage of this great offer from the Positive Coaching Alliance and help us continue to grow the game.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.